As I say, we're now going to hear three responses to John's paper and presentation. Now, what I'd like to ask Daniel Smith to... thanks, John. Come to the lectern. Daniel is the he's a consulting actuary of Taylor Fry down in Melbourne, and he's the convener of the Institute of Actuaries Flood Inquiry Submission Committee. Thank you.
Thanks, Rick. Hello, everyone. As Rick said, I'm a convener of the National Disaster Working Group that we've got at the Institute. I'll aim to go through quickly where our submission is at this stage. We've gone through a standard process in terms of setting up the working group, and for the actuaries in the room, hopefully you're aware that we have tried to get your opinions. Time hasn't run out yet, but it's certainly getting close. It is a work in progress. It's not our official policy position that I'm putting forward today, so please keep that in mind. As with anything in a public policy style nature, there are differing views, and so we're still trying to narrow down where we get to on that. Also on this, we haven't come to a specific solution. It's fair to say that even within the working group, there's a wide range of views. We do have a range of common views, but in areas of specifics in terms of a solution, people's views vary quite significantly. So we're going to be working pretty hard over the next few days to get a submission in on the 14th. At the moment, our submission is structured into three sections. The first section is, for want of a better description, a public policy section. I suppose in terms of the Institute's view on this, we're coming from a public interest perspective. We don't have a particular barrow to push, so we're really looking at this from the interests of the general public and trying to get a solution that serves all Australians. The second section is more related to the issues paper and goes through in some details some responses to the issues paper. One of the difficulties in terms of putting a response together, and particularly with an item with issues that we're going through here, it's very easy to see the negatives, and it's very easy to argue down anything that's put forward. And arguably, we do that in some cases. We're also trying to put forward some positives and trying to make some suggestions as to how things might operate better. And that's to some extent covered in section three of the paper, where we put forward a range of alternatives, and with each of those alternatives, what their strengths and weaknesses are, and almost some suggestion that maybe it's a mix and match of different options to get the right outcome. So in terms of public policy, first statement there, insurance on its own doesn't provide a sustainable long-term solution. Now, that sounds pretty harsh. I suppose if we go back and if we were starting with a clean slate, we'd say, well, the first thing you do is you avoid the risk. The second thing you do is mitigate the risk. The third thing is minimise it. And then the last thing you do once you've got a risk that you can't avoid and it's as minimal as possible, then you insure it for when it actually occurs. I suppose in terms of lots of the response to the issues paper, people have interpreted the issues paper as almost seeing going through things the other way and looking to solve insurance and then see what we can fix up after that. In talking with John, and I went through and reread the paper last night, it's pretty clear that the terms of reference aren't limited to just solving an insurance problem. Obviously, there's a focus on flood, but the terms of reference also do give the review team the opportunity to highlight the various issues in terms of risk mitigation, and they're certainly some of the areas that we think need to be focused on in terms of developing a long-term solution. So the last point there, that we certainly see a long-term goal of risk management and mitigation as being primary importance, and certainly relocation in some areas has to be an option. John's already mentioned, and it's certainly the Institute's view, that cross-subsidisation and governance subsidies either dull the impact that price signals can have in influencing mitigation. They can also drive undesirable actions. Another point there is in intergenerational equity. We see it's quite important to, as developing arguably a solution for generations going forward, that we keep in mind who's got to pay for what we do and who's paying for what risks people take on or create. So any solution really needs to think about making sure that we just don't push off today's problems till tomorrow. Finally, the funding solution must be transparent. People must understand where money's coming from and going to and what the cross-subsidies are. Without that, as John stole my thunder obviously just before, people don't have adequate incentives to mitigate or avoid risk. The insurance solution in itself doesn't address the current non-insurance and under-insurance issues. Not just talking about flood here, talking about all natural perils. There is an element of non-insurance. Obviously, contents much more than buildings. There is a large element of under-insurance. We consider that there is a need to try and find solutions that incentivise people to at least reduce this issue. In terms of individuals, it's our view that the general public don't really assess risks in the same way that we do, and arguably the language we use here doesn't help either. A 1-in-100-year flood, if I'm living in that place, I'm saying, well, I'm out of here in 20 years, it's not going to impact me. And there are a lot of people who think in that way and don't see insuring for a 1-in-100-year event as necessary. From an insurance perspective, we're saying a 1-in-100-year risk or more is actually a high risk. I suppose maybe it's the language we change here, and when we're referring to these things, we've got to start talking about immaterial, low, moderate, medium, high and extreme or something like that, so that if you're in an extreme risk area, you understand it rather than trying to interpret what the numbers are. It's our view that contents, strata, title, small business are all very important and to the extent possible should be included in a solution. The review's made the point through the issues paper that contents isn't as important financially as buildings. I suppose I'd argue that for lots of the people who are really impacted by these sorts of natural disaster events, it's the ones who are renting and lose their contents and don't have the financial capacity to get back. So it's certainly, I think, in the public's interest to try and make sure we can solve these. Strata title, as has been mentioned, is a growing beast, and as population density increases, is arguably going to continue to increase. And to avoid finding a solution now is just putting off tomorrow's problem. Actions of the sea is similar, I suppose, in our view to the content strata idea. Climate change, global warming, rising sea levels, more extreme and more frequent storms, presumably all of that leads to greater likelihood of from actions of the sea. Obviously, a key issue there is that there's lots of very expensive houses who are most impacted by that. But to avoid trying to find a solution now, I'm taking John's point that, you know, we've got a once-in-a-generation opportunity to do something about it, and if we don't do something now, then once the event happens, we'll be trying to pick up the pieces. Finally, in terms of our public sort of view, we're very much of the view that national flood mapping is essential. And that those flood maps need to be made widely and arguably freely available to all stakeholders. Having the situation where we have the have-nots, haves and have-nots within flood maps will create distortions in the market. Moving on to responses to the issues paper, there really are lots of pros and cons to any solution, and we're not trying to pretend that this is simple. The fact that it's not simple is the reason why the Institute hasn't come back with a solution. We can argue around different points, and we have done for hours. So we've taken the view that it's quite important to at least raise what the various issues are with different solutions and to try and make suggestions for improvements. I suppose the first point in that is that the issues paper talks about accessibility and affordability as a way of measuring the benefits of a particular model. We're of the view that should also include criteria of the impact on mitigation incentives, equity in terms of who pays and who has the risk, efficiency, making use of the resources that are there and not creating either excessive overheads or cumbersome processes, and practical viability. Whatever we do has to be practical. We have to be able to implement it. But I note there that practical viability isn't 100% correlated with expense. Just because something's expensive doesn't make it not practical. It's been pointed out the opt-out model doesn't remove the post-inundation debate about whether the damage was caused by flood. That is a key risk in the opt-out model. There's debate within the Institute at the moment as to how we feel about the opt-out model, but I suppose then taking that further, if there is a flood pool that only covers flood risk, is there not the same argument about whether the damage was caused by flood between insurers and the flood pool? So we actually could have the same situation, just at a higher level. The automatic flood cover poses numerous issues that need to be addressed. I suppose, how can the structure that's developed ensure that small and medium insurers can compete? If we set up a basis where insurers have to try and individually price risks, or are looking to pick the eyes out of the market because they can develop a better risk model, the small and medium and some medium-sized insurers just won't have the capacity or the interest necessarily to develop their processes to be able to compete. Also, how can adverse selection be avoided without compulsion to insure? Now, compulsion in this sense is used as you must insure, automatic being you must offer the cover. So we need to make sure that we don't, by having cover must be included, that we don't end up with those who think their place is going to flood insuring and those who don't think their place is going to flood not insuring. Related to the point before about small and medium-sized insurers, any automatic cover could lead to increasing red zones, basically areas where insurers refuse to write. You can see lots of those if you get on the internet and start searching through and type in a few postcodes and it says please call or must refer. And also, what will APRA's response be? Once we start talking about automatic flood cover at 1 in 100 year level, APRA's all working around a 1 in 200 year level in terms of its capital adequacy and the like. So there's certainly capital issues for insurers in terms of including flood cover automatically. We do prefer an engineering threshold over a price threshold. I do suspect that's because we have a much better understanding of what the price threshold might involve and very little about what the engineers can do, and maybe it's somebody else's problem if we do it that way. There are a range of issues in terms of how you assess thresholds using price. Using non-flood premiums as a basis could have unintended distortions, I suppose. If we take the example of two equivalent houses, one in North Queensland and one in Central Victoria, both with exactly the same flood risk, The one in northern Queensland will have a lower relative flood risk. The flood premium over its non-flood premium will be lower than the one in central Victoria, because the non-flood premium will in northern Queensland will include cyclone and the like, which won't be within the central Victorian one. So using that price therefore distorts how the flood risk might be seen. Now, as I said, that's a way of picking holes in what's been put forward. What we don't have yet is a way of suggesting what could be done, and the our submission team, our working group, will certainly be trying to think of coming up with ways that can improve that. The full economic costs of options need to be considered. So not just the short-term cost, not just what replacing the property is. These solutions really need to make sure we take into account the impact on communities, the social impact, the psychological impact, the social welfare impact. And I think once we start looking broadly at the costs, parts of the property costs wind down, I suppose, in terms of their relevance. We've mentioned that measuring flood risks is complex. Also highlight that the development of suitable flood models isn't cheap. It's an expensive exercise to go across Australia and do flood mapping, to then to try and develop flood models from that mapping and work out not just what the level of a flood might be, but where its water flow goes and how high it'll be and what properties will be impacted. It's an extremely complex and expensive exercise and quite uncertain. And added to that, consumers aren't necessarily well-informed purchasers of insurance. So we need to be careful about what we're doing in terms of providing what we say is surety around whether or not they're in a flood zone, when in actual fact we don't really know. Section 3 of the paper goes through some alternative models. I can't do the models justice without quite a detailed explanation of each and what the pros and cons are. So we've listed them there. Our response paper will go through them. They're not put forward as better solutions or best solutions. They're put forward as various options which approach things in different ways and hopefully raise questions and point out issues that each model faces so that we can come to a better solution. I suppose in going through those alternative models, we've compared them to the 6 criteria that we've put forward for that model should be judged against. Now, those criteria are conflicting, and so any solution that we're going to come up with here is going to have compromises between the weights, I suppose, you give to the various criteria. Now, I'm going to finish off with the presentation, which will be on the Institute website, goes through a range of key points. Those key points are really just bringing together what I've put up in the previous slides, so I'd be repeating myself to go through them again, but they'll be there on the slides if you're interested in getting a hold of them. Thank you.